Hi. I'm going to do a talk about sandbox applications for GNOME. I did pretty much the same talk already at GNOME Asia, so if you've attended that one, there's the other talk which might be more interesting. And that's in parallel with this. But anyway, we have made a little bit of progress since GNOME Asia, so there's some new stuff in this as well. Sandbox applications for GNOME. So let me first introduce who we are. So I am Lennart Pöttering, and I'm one of the guys who's behind the systemd project, and we actually have two more people there. There's Kai Sievers and there's Michal. And of course, you have everybody here, actually. We're pretty much, and we all work together on the systemd project. Systemd is a little bit like, it used to be just an init system, but grew a little bit in its perspective, what it's supposed to be, and nowadays it's a little bit like the basic building block to build an operating system from. So it brings a lot of components that are probably not too interesting for a desktop conference, but it does cover a lot of ground that is relevant for the desktop. Then coming back to the actual topic, this is about the actual applications. We think Linux needs a strong way how we can do apps. And we believe that much of how that's implemented needs to live in the lower levels of the stack, because we believe that the concepts, the basic building blocks that you use there should be kernel things rather than just something that is created in user space. Right? So the isolation, for example, for the actual sandboxing part is something we believe needs to be in the lowest level with kernel objects and not just something that is bolted on top. And not part of the actual operating system. Hi. So our general goal of the systemd project is that we want GNOME, or in the more general case even Linux, to be the modern general purpose OS. We believe that apps are an absolutely crucial part of it. I mean, nobody uses an operating system for the purpose of using an operating system. People use an operating system because they have to achieve something that's actually interesting for them. So, and how do you achieve that? Because you run some apps that do what you want on the operating system. And hence, the operating system is just the thing that should be there. And work for the apps, and the apps environment is actually the most important thing we probably have in the operating system. So, if I talk about, by the way, I know I speak very fast. If you have any issues with that, just show up and I'll try to slow down. If you have any questions, totally interrupt me right away. I would totally prefer if this becomes more of a discussion than just me talking stuff. So if you have any questions, totally interrupt me. I love that. Talking about apps, what actually are apps? So from our perspectives, coming from the lower levels of the stack, apps are sandboxed user applications. Shipped in a single file per app, no privileges for execution, with stable APIs and reliable testability. So, taking this apart, sandboxed user applications. So this is about user applications, first of all. So it's not about, running Apache on my server, because that is server stuff. We're really only talking here in the sense of apps of user applications, meaning Firefox, meaning GIMP, all these kind of things. Sandboxed means that there is isolation of this app towards the operating system, so that what the app does cannot be exploited, and attackers cannot get access to the rest of the operating system through the app, so that nothing from the operating system leaks into the app, and the other way around too, that nothing from the app leaks into the operating system. Shipped in a single file per app is something that we're really interested in, so that it becomes easy handling apps. Because right now on Linux, apps are usually shipped in RPM or something like that, and they distribute files all over the place in the file system. I don't think it's a very particularly useful or friendly way to do. What we want is that people can, consider an app as something they could attach to an email, right? So that it's just one file, and that's all you need, and will just work that way. Other operating systems have a little bit something like that. For example, on macOS, you have these app folders. In that case, it feels a little bit like a file, but isn't. We actually want to go for one app in one file. No privileges for execution, which is very important. After all, this is about user stuff, right? So user stuff should not require privileges of the operating system to run. This is systematically different from anything like RPM that existed before. Because an RPM, to install an RPM, you need system privileges. And because RPMs are so powerful, you can, like, there's no way to distinguish an RPM or Debian package, for the matter, that interferes with the closest with the operating system in an RPM that's actually really just an app. So, it is absolutely crucial that there are no privileges for the installation, for the activation required. And then the next thing is stable ABIs, which I think is probably the most complex thing of them all. We in Linux suck at keeping stable APIs. I mean, there are different APIs around, and some are better than others. Like, for example, the kernel API is usually pretty good. It's not perfect, but it's pretty, like, you have a good chance of being able to run stuff that was written against the kernel API from the 90s and will still work on current Linux kernels. Not everything will, but there's a good chance. GNOME has not been as good with that. GNOME 1 applications don't work on GNOME 3. There are a lot of reasons for that, and I think it's a good thing that is that way that we can break ABI, but it is a substantial problem for third-party developers. If they want to write that application, they don't want to constantly be caught in that cycle that we have that is really fast in updating the operating system. So we need something to do something about that. And reliable testability means let's talk a little bit more about stable ABIs. For us, it also means that the differences between the various distributions are minimized. Because currently, the distributions alter in massive ways. For example, one of my favorite examples is there's on Fedora and RHEL systems, there's this directory called userlibexec, which is something where you're supposed to put internal binaries. At least that's how most people understand it. And this directory only exists like that in Fedora and RHEL and nowhere else. What is that? Automake does a lot of things, but nobody uses Automark like that. I mean, Automake has stuff like varcom and things like that, like the comdir and things like that. I wouldn't blame Automake for that. I do blame RHEL for that, Red Hat for that. I mean, we don't follow the GNU rules at all anyway. I mean, if we did, then everything would end up in user local, right? Yeah, I don't know. It is, I think because this is recorded, we probably should, if we have discussions, do that with the. I personally blame more Fedora and RHEL with that. It's in the Fedora packaging policy that should be used, right? Also, I mean, it's kind of cool if I point this thing out, because then we are to blame, we as Fedora are to blame, rather than everybody else is to blame. So anyway, this is a specialty, regardless how it came into existence. It's a specialty of Fedora and RHEL. And it makes things difficult, because, depending on which operating system you compile your stuff for, things need to be laid out in different ways. And this gets worse and worse and worse. I mean, for example, some distributions use systemd, others use upstart and these kind of things. Many of this we will never be able to deal with. However, we need to think more about, unifying the ABIs and APIs of the operating systems, and we need to make sure that we somehow, even if we are incapable of always guaranteeing our main supported ABIs to be stable, we need to somehow make it possible to relatively easily run older apps with older ABIs on the same system. Reliable testability. That means, what is absolutely horrible for third-party application vendors who want to write software for Linux is that because there are so many distributions and because there are so many different ways to run them, because you always have a different set of RPMs and so on, it is incredibly difficult to actually systematically test your software against that, right? Because, I mean, Linux kind of provides the same APIs on all the distributions, regardless if you run Debian or if you run Ubuntu, if you run Fedora or Gentoo or whatnot. They do have the same APIs. However, if you actually want to test against that, then it's not sufficient that they provide the same APIs. You need to also know that they work exactly the same. And like the test matrix explodes by if you multiply it by the different distributions and the different versions of the distributions and the different architectures and things like that, which is like for projects like Firefox, they can still do that for a couple of distributions, but as soon as yeah, you only are this little application developer and you want to know that your stuff works, how should you ever, I mean, it would basically require you to install any Fedora version you want to test against within every Ubuntu version and then do your testing yourself. So we need to do something there to make testability easier, like reducing variables in the whole equation. So this, of course, means we need to ask ourselves, what's the purpose of RPMs and dApps in a world where we want to achieve all that? RPMs and dApps, as I already mentioned, are something that's installed only by root. They live in a common namespace. Vendor can have access to all kinds of vendor APIs because they're basically unrestricted. And they have this huge test matrix. So we don't want to get rid of RPMs or dApps or anything like that, right? We think they're really useful things, but they're not useful for actually packaging sandbox user apps because they have way too much power. So the way we see it is, yeah, RPMs and dApps, fine. That's how you build your operating system, but it's not what you actually then run on top of the operating system. That's a different format that does not have to deal with all the problems that RPMs and dApps have. So, yeah. So, RPMs dApps are primarily focused around distributions as a single provider, builder, tester of programs. This is something about that's intrinsic in RPMs because they have so many dependency specifications, for example, which expect that the namespace of the dependencies expressed in the RPMs are something of a unified namespace, right? Like if somebody depends on a library by the name libfoo or something, then it needs to be made sure in RPMs and dApps that this libfoo means exactly one library, not another one. However, libfoo is a very generic name, so everybody might have something different there. And even if they have the same library under that name, they might have it in a different ABI and things like that. So RPMs and dApps are fine, but they imply that there's only one vendor in power who manages the entire namespace and provides every single RPM with you. As soon as you depart from that, and you have multiple vendors in the game, not everything coming from Fedora alone, then RPMs and dApps are really strange things because the namespace clash is a massive one. So apps, on the other hand, should be the opposite of that, right? We want people to have many sources on the internet. We want to make sure that there can be multiple providers of apps and people can compile their own, just to provide them on their website and things like that. And we want to allow them that this can be untrusted code. Because this is like the next thing. If you have a distribution in the mix, then you do trust the distribution to a certain level and then expect from the distribution that it will actually take the code from the various applications, look at them, figure out that the code is okay, doesn't do anything evil, will package it from you so that you don't have to trust every single app developer and you can instead just trust the distribution as a whole. As soon as we go to the apps model where we want to have lots of vendors, then this becomes much more of a problem because suddenly if you get everything directly from the vendor, you have to trust every single one of them. And that's a lot of trust to hand out. So this is a problem, but it's a problem that we can deal with technical solutions. By making sure, as mentioned with the sandboxing, that even if you don't trust that app vendor so much, that whatever he can do with your system isn't too bad to actually break it. Let me see how much time we have. So apps have the key feature that they have isolated from the surrounding OS and user private data. For security reasons, for API stability reasons, testability reasons, building reasons. And there's an exception with extensions. So, yeah, the isolation from the surrounding OS is like the key thing here. We want to make sure that if you install a game, that game does not get access to your address book. And if you install, a web browser, it should not get access to your friends list with Pidgin. And these things like that. This is something that we did not ever, never had on Unix, is isolation of the apps between them that you run under the same user ID. On Unix, classically, access control is exclusively per user, right? As soon as you have some code that runs as your user, it gets access to everything you have. And that is just, I mean, it's a little bit perverse. It's about that. The reason for that is security reasons. But also, as mentioned, we want to isolate things from the surrounding OS for API stability reasons, right? Because currently, if you package your software, you see the entire API as RPMs. You see the entire API of the operating system, and that is a bad thing, right? You need to make sure that the app actually only sees those APIs that are deemed stable and supportable. But do not see anything else, and do not end up pulling in blind dependencies that you cannot see. Like, for example, there's the problem. Think about GStreamer, right? GStreamer has a stable API. If your application pulls that in, that's totally fine. But you create a lot of problems because GStreamer is based around plugins. So these individual plugins are internal APIs of GStreamer, so you would think that wouldn't mind. That wouldn't be a problem. However, ultimately, these plugins will pull in other libraries, and those are in a weird position that they do not have any stable APIs very frequently, like, for example, LibAV usually didn't have. So, this means we need to somehow isolate the operating system so that not some dirty code running on the operating system can leak into the app, and not some stuff you don't want from the app can leak into the host. There are a couple of standard exceptions for that, which are extensions, like stuff that really extends existing software. For example, GNOME Shell, you have a JavaScript extension for that. That is a very different thing because it must be able to run in the same sandbox, in the same context as GNOME Shell itself. So, which means, security is very important, but there are some exceptions where we actually cannot take benefit of that security. So, I already mentioned that. We want kernel-level isolation. We want this isolation that we need for reasons of API stability, testability, and security. We want that on the kernel level. Why do we want that for the kernel level? First and foremost, for the security reasons, because security is a complex thing, right? There are so many different things like SELinux and capabilities and blah, blah, blah. It's stuff that people shouldn't think about. It's stuff that... leaks into quite a few subsystems. I don't know, it's involved with process management, with user management, all these kind of things. If we ever do isolation exclusively in user space and have user space components do this, then there's no way how this can be integrated with all that stuff that we really don't want to care about but need to have. So for us it's really important that everything that is enforced is kernel-level isolation. And this is also something we want with our apps solution. We want something that is free, that is community-based, so we want something that is not bound to one single app store, but is something that people can set up their own app stores if they want to, and is vendor agnostic so that not only, it's not supposed to be something that where Red Hat sets up an app store and nobody else can take benefit of that. It's supposed to be something where everybody can set an app store and people can even have multiple app stores around. So it's supposed to be something that's truly free and the way how Linux itself is. So this is so far a little bit about the stuff that we want to reach. Yeah? It's about security, about freeness, about a couple of other things. The next part of the slides focuses mostly on how we think we can get there. We have been working on a couple of things already. We group everything that we want to do there in 9 steps. It's a lot of work. It's not going to happen tomorrow or something like that. But we have a lot of things already in code. Another couple of things we haven't thought about and have plans about. But until we have the full thing, that will take a while still. We think it's absolutely necessary to make Linux thrive as an ecosystem because, quite frankly, it's impossibly hard to write good apps for Linux simply because you cannot distribute them, test them, and so on. So any questions to this point? You guys should totally interrupt me if you have questions. There's a question. The microphone. Where's the microphone?
Yeah, I don't know if this is slightly edge casey, and maybe it is. If I have one machine shared by 2 people, so it would be per user, right, that installs the app. If I install two people in the same machine, would I install the same app twice properly, right?
So, I mean, it is our mission, like a part of our mission statement is that users are, should be able to install these apps without requiring privileges, but that does not mean that that's the only way how apps are installed. So, for example, an administrator could just drop something into the system, and then every user has that. So, yeah, it's just about that we want to allow users to do this without requiring anything from the administrator, but the administrator is always in power.
Thanks.
There's more questions over there.
If any application is just a single file, what about shared libraries?
That's a good question. We'll probably come to that later, though. But it's a valid point.
Okay.
Anyway, I mean, so far it's just about the mission statement, why we believe this is necessary, and how and what we think this all should be providing. The nine steps are about the technical implementation of things. But anyway, I don't see any further questions, so let's just proceed with the technical stuff. There is one. Where? Over there.
Many more modern applications come in a client-server version of. Usually internally, and does this advocate for that, as in automatically starting things, or are we only focusing on single app, single focus?
So this is explicitly about user apps, right? User apps meaning apps that the user himself, like the end user himself, plays around with. It's not about server software. I think much of that stuff that we're designing here will ultimately be useful on the server as well, but this is clearly out of focus for the stuff that we call apps here.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Okay. The nine steps. That's all the questions right now, right? Okay, so the first one that we're currently working on is make KDBus work. KDBus is a project that Kai and I have been working on together with Daniel Muck and Greg Krohartman, a couple of others. It's a port of the classic DBus system to the kernel. DBus, I hope you all know, is like this IPC, this really basic thing, how processes can talk to each other. Since this is about processes talking to each other, we believe it is absolutely essential that this core component is aware of sandboxing. Meaning that, yeah, because we need to limit what apps can talk to, we need to have the sandboxing right in the IPC layer. So for us, because we again want all these things to be enforced by the kernel, it is absolutely essential that we make KDBus work. KDBus work, the other thing is because we believe that the KDBus and DBus in general is like a really nice way how communication out and in of the sandbox can work. So it is for us important that if we want to KDBus or DBus to be the single interface in and out of the sandbox, it needs to be capable of actually exchanging large amounts of data with it. Because, I mean, if it's supposed to be the one and only thing in and out of the sandbox, then it needs to be really good and cover all the use cases that you need from IPC. Now, DBus classically is not useful for exchanging substantial data. It's focused, and that is in the original mission statement, only on control data, right? Short message calls, which short parameters. If we want to make it like the single thing, then we should be able to also use it for exchanging things like a JPEG file, a document file, or anything else you would like. So yeah, for us, this meant, yeah, if we want to have to be DBus the central IPC, we need to fix these things first, add sandboxing and things like that to the kernel. The current state of KDBus is that we have a lot of code. It kind of works. But we have not, it's part of the systemd project. Like the user space part is systemd. The kernel space part is currently in a repository. We are not far from actually making it work altogether. What basically the last major missing thing for us is that we actually port systemd in its entirety to the new APIs that KDBus and libsystembus provide. Which is basically, I mean, it's something, it's not difficult, it's just a lot of work, like moving from one library to the next library. We hope that we have something really presentable, like booting up an entire system with only KDBus by the end of the year. I've submitted a talk to LinuxConf AU about KDBus, so and I better have something presentable by then. So that's my way to get the push on us so that we actually have something by then. Yeah, so much about KDBus. It's a huge project. It's going to be awesome because we finally get a really good IPC on Linux that is fast and that provides everything we ever wanted, from sandboxing to broadcasting to activation and all these kind of things. That was step one. Step two is we want these app sandboxes built on Linux namespaces, SATCOM, C groups, and capabilities. So, depending on if you ever dealt with the lower levels of the stack in Linux, then yeah, Linux namespaces, SATCOM, C groups, and capabilities is something you might have run into. Suffice to say, these are very generic tools that the kernel provides for isolating and doing both in a certain set of programs can see, but also in what they can do. And while these are completely generic, we need to make them very specific in some way, for the app's use case. Just like that, if you use Linux namespace, SATCOM, C groups, capabilities, you can build anything out of it. You can secure a service and whatnot. But to actually match that on app sandboxes, we need to use it in a very special way. Of course, namespaces and stuff like that. This also applies to the KDBus stuff, where the namespacing is built in from day one already. Now, a couple of things about this are really interesting. Like, for example, with the C group stuff, we want that every app runs inside of a C group so that we can put resource limits on them so that no app can bring down the system. But this has a lot of interesting effects beyond that as well, because it suddenly allows us to manage runtime apps in a way that only Android and Metro and these kind of things could. For example, in that we give the foreground app a boost in terms of CPU and I/O, and we can even the background app gets a malus for time accuracy, and we could even freeze the background apps. This has been done in Linux before for things like Memo had something like that. But with this model, if we have this in the definition of apps, then we suddenly have all these options open where we can make use of define similar things. The net effect of all of that is hopefully that apps are a little bit more robust, but primarily about power management. And feels a little bit nicer if the foreground app gets more CPU than the background apps. So yeah, second part is sandboxes. We have no code for that. Part of this is actually is something that John has discussed in the past weeks with us too, but he was a little bit disappointed with the results. We believe what's essential for this is actually that we get a stricter file hierarchy specification for this. I mentioned this before with the libxx thing. If we want to make this happen, that these sandboxes can work on every machine, then we need to make sure that the machines do not sort things into different directories all the time. But we also need to kind of give the app developer an idea how he himself is supposed to place his data, so that it does not clash with his operating system or any other operating system that follows these guidelines. This is a complex thing because there's already an FHS around, which tries to standardize how the entirety of Unix works. For this app stuff, we probably need to reinvestigate that entire topic and focus exclusively on what apps, user apps, unprivileged apps, what they need to do. This is not a job for necessarily so much for GNOME in itself, but it is actually a job for the entirety of the Linux world that they actually accept that the differences are minimized and that Fedora stops doing its own things regarding libxx and similar things.
I guess GNOME should put out some rules.
Yep.
The distributions need to follow it. Given the freedom we have today, what doesn't that make any sense?
This is something very important. Like, we currently, all distributions actually take GNOME and package it differently, right? If you have a GNOME on Ubuntu, it will not use libxx. If you have the same GNOME on Fedora, it will use libxx. And that's a big problem because suddenly everything looks differently. So while I think that the distributions need to fix the issue, there's also something for GNOME to do. Like GNOME, the release team or somewhere like that, has to define exactly how the files are located, are placed how the ABIs look on the different operating system. This is going to be tough. Of course, we don't have anything like a certification system where we could actually enforce these kind of things. But it's of major importance that this is clearly communicated to the distributions, that they stop doing their own thing if they want to have something that is compatible with GNOME, right? GNOME needs to document this is how you package it, and you don't package it anywhere else, and if you don't package it that way, then you're out of the game and you have no compatibility with what we provide. So, yeah, it's something to fix for the distributions, but they need to do it according to the recommendations and tough language that GNOME needs to use there, how these things go. Yeah, by the way, if you have any further questions, there's a question. There's the mics coming. Just a little bit.
Once we have the namespaces and the C groups, would it be possible to enforce the file hierarchy by the mount namespaces? So
when I speak of namespaces here, this usually applies to file system namespaces. But namespaces since they isolate things, they cannot be used to enforce anything, right? And also, it's a different thing. Like for example, what the app inside of the container does is relatively irrelevant. They have more freedom than the operating system has because the apps are not API. The operating system, however, is. So we will not be able to enforce much. I mean, I'm sure that the operating or GNOME could supply a tool that can lint the operating system and make sure that it exposes the right operating the right APIs. It could even provide a tool that you can run on an app to make sure that the app does not put something in a place where it would clash with what the operating system would supply. Sandboxes are not really a tool to enforce something. There's the question. Or
about the new FHS, does it mean we'll get user move everywhere?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the question. Was something about user move?
Yeah, we will get it in other distributions, not just Fedora and Arch.
It might make sense, but I don't think that really matters too much for the app stuff because the libraries are all in the. Yeah, it's a good question actually. Well, we do require libc and stuff like that. But I mean, yeah. So what Kai basically said is that this is about user apps, right? And I highlighted a couple of ones already here. So it is not essential, that the stuff that is required for early boot and stuff. The reason why the old distributions still have that split off, that is not necessarily an API that the apps ever need. So it's not of that crucial, but. Maybe there's a little bit of chickening out.
The couple of tools could be probably symlinks that we need in user. I mean, we don't need the early boot tools split in two different directories. I mean, the apps will not depend on stuff being in a root of us.
Yep. Okay, so I think it's a problem, but I don't think it's that big a problem. Okay, any last question?
I'm assuming that the new strict file hierarchy specification is something that we all want, but has there just been a plan or just get everybody from like KDE and XFCE and GNOME and Debian and SUSE all together and just say, okay, let's hammer out the specs here? Because it seems like it's sort of a pipe dream if we don't have a plan about where to go with it. Just get everybody on the same page.
You know what they say about committees and standards? I'm not sure that will work that way. I don't know. We should get the right people involved, absolutely. I don't think we should get everybody involved, because then you get bullshit. I mean, if you include the Fedora people, they will fight for libexec. And if you include the others, they will hate it. So, yeah.
I need to go faster.
I shall go faster.
Yes. You're running out of time.
Oh, you got like 10 minutes or so, right? Let's. We can have discussions about all of this later on. So I'm still at step two. Let's go for the other seven steps in the next 10 minutes. The next thing is that we want something called portals. Portals is something that the term is something we came up with at a Hackfest in Brussels earlier this year. It's supposed to be something how apps can interface with each other without having to know about each other. It's something that is probably going to be based on top of KDBus, but it's a very interesting technology. So it's basically something that is focused that is based on an idea from Android, where they call it what?
Intents,
of course, intents. Yeah, and what Windows calls contracts, right? And these things are really interesting things. Because they basically are a way how you can isolate apps from the rest of the operating system without having that concept of security isolation even be visible as such. So to give an example of what a portal should be doing, let's say you have an app, and that app, like it's an email app, and you want to be able to send a picture that you just took over to another machine. On traditional Linux, this would mean that this email app would have to have access to the camera device and then would take the picture from the camera device and attach it to the email and send it away. However, that's quite a bit of a security problem because you don't really want to give access to the camera to email program. So the idea of portals and intents on Android is to always have that split into different sandboxes and require interactivity between those two things. So the idea in that case is that if you have your email application, you want to send a JPEG picture over, what happens is that the email app program goes to the system and says, I would like to have a picture here. Please help me. The system then says, okay, then goes and checks which programs could actually provide a picture. It could be like the gallery, the viewer thing, or it could be actually the camera tool. Then the camera tool would be activated or the gallery viewer, and you would take your picture. There's the interactivity. Which has this nice effect that ultimately if the user didn't want to allow that, he would say, what? Why did my camera application actually get started? There was no reason for this, and we'll press cancel and cancel it. So in a way, there's a security question hidden behind this interactivity. So that you only grant access to the camera indirectly and always have this interactivity by the user so that if that action was not supposed to take place, he will say cancel and be maybe a little bit confused, but not allow it. It's wonderful technology because it's on one way about integration of apps, right? Because if you send an email and you get the camera application running, you get the same camera application running as always, but it's also the security technology. Seeing that it's also the security technology is like the awesome thing about it. There are other cases for portals, for example, just think about OpenOffice. Currently, OpenOffice needs to be able to access your home directory and all other directories so that you can open a file in any one of them. But that really sucks because OpenOffice is a gigantic piece of code and you don't really want to give it access to everything that it could ever, like your address book, like your private banking data, like your Firefox cache and whatnot. So with portals, you can solve that problem again because the OpenOffice would just tell the operating system, hey, so I'm living in the sandbox and I would like to have a file. Please give me one. And then the operating system would again interactively do something out of the sandbox, look for the file, and return it back to the sandbox, and the sandbox would get it. But it would only get access to that specific file. It would never have seen any other file of the operating system. So it's the portal stuff, something supposed to be very generic, how the security transition there is hidden behind user interactivity, instead of having questions like PolicyKit usually asks them, like, should this app get access to this device? You just do the action, but because you require interactivity, the user will make the decision just at the side of it without actually explicitly asking for it. So.
And this can be done today without any of.
So the portal stuff is actually something that GNOME really needs to care about us. It's nothing that has to come from the system side of things from the lower levels. This can happen basically now. Number four, app images as compressed file system with multiple partitions in a loopback file. The idea for us is we wanted to have these apps as one image at all, but we also want to have only, but we want to make sure that everything's on the kernel level. So our idea there is that applications are actually shipped in a single file that is loopback mounted with a couple of partitions in them, that will include everything like as real files that the application needs, then when the application is executed, it will be merged according to very specific rules with the API file that the app shall be able to access. And so that it basically, the app sees a real operating system that is a real file system hierarchy that is a merged version of what it itself shipped, plus everything that has been whitelisted as a system API from outside. So I'm going through this a little bit fast because I only got like less than 5 minutes left. Number five is an extended search path logic in glib and friends. This is something we really need. If we have these apps and the contents of the apps are not available in the normal system, then suddenly you get these problems that, let's say, GNOME Shell should be able to enumerate all the apps that are installed. That means it needs to look for all the desktop files. Then suddenly you have the problem, well, it's not sufficient anymore to look into user share applications for the desktop files, because suddenly that's not where all the desktop files will be. They will be inside of these single file loopback mounted super file system thingy. The net result of that is we really would like to see the search path logic extended so that glib is capable of automatically finding these things also in the apps instead of just in user share applications. This applies not only to finding apps, it applies to quite a few other things like looking for icons, looking for music files, using for whatever themes and these kind of things. Then the next thing is a sandbox-aware display manager. This is really important to us because X11 is this gigantic thing. As soon as you get access to X11, to the server, you can do anything with it. You can talk to other applications, fake input to other applications, these kind of things. If we want to have sandbox applications, this means that, it can't really be X that is in the mix there. The good thing is Wayland has been designed already in a way so that applications can never, ever access the input and output of other applications. They always see only their own buffer and nothing else. So, yeah, that is point six. Point seven is something we still need to discuss with Ryan. It's dconf. Like the configuration engine needs to be able to understand sandboxing, meaning that it needs to be able to do access control on that an app can only get access to the keys it should get to and nothing else. Number eight, a system for building apps and profiles, that's kind of related. A system for building apps, of course, it's not sufficient to just defining this. We also need to be giving the tools to developers to actually make building these apps easily. I think ultimately with the stuff that we defined, it's relatively easy to do minimal ports of existing apps like OpenOffice into the scheme because inside of the namespace container that I mentioned earlier, everything looks like a real operating system, except one that is very minimal. So they do not have to make many changes. They only have to make many changes as soon as it's about security and portals and things like that should be used. Anyway, how we think that the compatibility situation should be handled is with these called profiles. Profiles are basically something, if you have Fedora, it would implement a profile called GNOME and maybe one profile called LSB. And that's about it. And an application would specify exactly one profile it's developed for. A profile would basically be a superset of libraries, of dbus interfaces, and about a couple of other things that need to exist. So the idea is basically that if somebody writes an application, he can pick one of these profiles and has freedom. Either he can say, OK, I want to focus on GNOME 3.0. That's relatively new. Then he has to deal with the fact that he has to rely on GNOME's capabilities to make stable APIs and keep them stable. Or he can say, I don't care about GNOME. I care about LSB only. I don't trust the GNOME guys because they break API all the time. Then he can do that. Of course, he will not be able to get access to the GNOME APIs that way. But he can still include them in his own image because, after all, that image includes pretty much something that looks like a real operating system. So this gives basically developers the option, like how much do they trust upstream, how often do they expect that they want to update the application, and the deal is basically, yeah, apps like Firefox, they're constantly updated. They would, Firefox releases a new release every 3 months or so, if I'm correctly informed. So they could basically say, yeah, we always track the newest GNOME, and always the newest GNOME profile, and then they do that and everything will work. On the other hand, I have no time anymore, but there is games and stuff like that. Games usually are written once, released immediately, then there's maybe one update and that's it. So they would focus on a different profile, like the LSB profile. They would get less integration, would have to rely less on the stability guarantees by the operating system vendor, but would get something out of the door. This is my last slide, app stores. This is completely out of focus for systemd. We need app stores, of course, as soon as we have that. That, of course, is the last step. Between all these nine steps, there's a lot of other things. This talk is just supposed to give you a little bit of an overview of what we're working on. As mentioned, we're currently busy with the KDBA stuff, and we work with C groups and things like that and try to make session systemd working, which will give us a definition of the app. But there's still a lot of stuff left to do. Anyway, thank you very much for your time. If you have any further questions, maybe we have time for one question? No? So one of you is lucky and can ask one question, otherwise let's do something outside. So you are lucky and get the one question.
So shared or bundled libraries?
I'm sorry?
Shared or bundled libraries in those app files?
Yeah, that's a good question, shared versus bundled libraries. The distribution people, they hate bundled libraries. For those who don't know the details about this, is basically Firefox and all these things, they tend to ship as shared like a couple of shared libraries that we otherwise are part of the operating system with their application, and distribution people totally hate that. Application developers always do that. Both think they are absolutely right. I think they actually are, and we need to technically solve that problem. So I think ultimately this means we need to support bundled libraries. However, we need to deal with the fact that they suck. They suck for security reasons, but I think that the best way to deal with security reasons is by security technology. So that's, again, something where the sandboxing is relevant, right? If you want to allow Firefox to ship its own SSL library, then you need to make sure that whatever happens inside of Firefox never can get out of there, and it needs to be tightly sandboxed, right? But I think ultimately, there is a really, really strong reason why Firefox does bundle things. It's a testability thing. It's about, they want exactly that version that they know with the APIs and the bug fixes they know, instead of something that is supplied by somebody else where they don't know, which is constantly updated and not ABI stable. So yeah, this stuff is supposed to provide support for bundled libraries, and I don't think there's any way around that. How much is bundled and how much is shipped by the operating system is something you decide by the profiles. If you pick LSB profile, which is very low level, then you have to ship and bundle more. If you pick the GNOME profile, you have to ship and bundle less. But I don't think there's a way around bundling at least the least bits.
And what about the middle ground frameworks?
Well, frameworks are profiles, so you're supposed to provide them. But I don't know. Yeah, if you want a newer version of GStreamer, then you have to bundle it. Everything that's not part of the operating system profile that you hack for, you have to bundle.
So there's no possibility that, you know, if an operating system doesn't have some very popular third-party library, then everybody has to bundle their own copy of that third-party library instead of using...
Sure, and they should talk to the operating system vendor to maybe ship that library. Okay, anyway, this was already one question more than I promised. So anyway, thank you very much for your time. If you have any further questions, ask them.